Midnight Market, the ultimate podcast for all you hustlers and dreamers out there. Join us on this electrifying journey from side hustle to CEO, where we dish all the insider secrets, success stories, and entrepreneurial wisdom that you need to conquer the business world. I'm Kira Deneen, CEO of DNA Today, and I'm joined by
Benny Rahmanov. Benny Rahmanov.
Ooh, I like the deep voice there, Benny. You're really bringing it already.
Benny. We're trying to get radio here, radio level.
Yeah, real radio. So, Benny, today we're going to be talking about one of our favorite topics, money, money, money.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Without money, we don't live.
Exactly. That's kind of why we're here, right?
Yeah.
Because people start businesses mostly for money, but also for passion, right? But we're focusing on the money part today.
Correct.
But at first, we're going to kind of split the episode into two topics about money. First, I'm going to learn about cryptocurrency from you because I know next to nothing. So I'm very excited to learn about cryptocurrency and everything you know about it. Sure. And then we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about budgeting your business and kind of talk about how we've both done that with our businesses. So to start out with cryptocurrency, I mean, this is a confusing topic, I think, of like understanding how this works. So can you just, as we start out, provide a beginner-friendly explanation of like what cryptocurrency is and how it works in a general sense before we get into the different types?
Okay, so the general sense is cryptocurrency was a borderless transactions where I can go from one locale to another locale and have my access of my money instantly, which you don't have that in the banking system. You can't go from U.S. banks to Japanese banks and have some sort of interconnectivity, although there is some sort of interconnectivity, but it's not instantaneous per se, right?
And then you gotta move money around. I was just in Japan. I gotta put money into my Suica, then use Suica for their train system. Yeah, so there's like steps to it.
Right, and the debit cards do work, right? That's something that Visa, MasterCard, and American Express, the four major companies have done. I think Discover as well, they all have done it. By the way, I think Discover is being bought out or something.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. We might have to Google that next time. Sure. But but in general, so what that's one aspect. The other aspect is blockchain, where we are able to chain and basically have an order book, open ledger book of the amounts and the timestamps of the amounts of transfers. So we know whose wallet is, we know what wallet exists, again, without knowing who the person is. The idea was that we never know who the person is, right? But the ledger is open. It's an open ledger, but we don't know who it is, right? There's a privacy policy involved there.
I was going to say, there's a lot of data privacy around blockchain from what I've heard.
Right, except for the actual regulatory bodies, which actually want the data to be in their hands as opposed to the public, right? So they want to know the data. Yeah, let's see how that works. How many banks have been breached with their data, right? Like, I mean, too many to count already, right?
So many of the big names.
Big names, so many of them. Enough is enough. Chase, Bank of America.
Wells Fargo.
All recorded informations. All recorded. And then what about the release of information to the government without warrants, right? With the January 6th event, right? Whether you agree with it or don't agree with it, it doesn't matter. Without request of a warrant, it was released. So, you know, where's the privacy policy there? That in itself is a huge topic that one day maybe we all talk about together as a team, but meaning the other shows as well. But in general, that's the idea that I believe is the purpose of blockchain. And of course, the main one is the more of an activist one is basically, they want decentralization from governments. That's really the main, wow, you know, like, oh, we need to have decentralization, you know?
So that's a big difference between other types of investing and just managing money, moving money around, because in a lot of areas, it's like, okay, you're in this country and you have these regulations, but with a lot of this cryptocurrency, that doesn't exist. So it kind of creates this way of, it doesn't matter what country you're in. Am I getting that right?
Think about that. It does and it doesn't. If the country does not adopt cryptocurrency, then you're in a problem, right? So the country must adopt some sort of crypto. They must adopt something crypto in order for it to work,
In order to use it as a form of payment, you mean?
Yes. So if, let's say I'm going to go to a Bitcoin. I think one of the biggest things they do have Bitcoin ATMs where you can withdraw your Bitcoin and get cash from wherever you are. I think ultimately, in my perspective, the ultimate use of Bitcoin, which is the ultimate blockchain, it's the ultimate cryptocurrency, it's the largest one.
Yes.
So the ultimate purpose of a Bitcoin is basically, like I said, borderless. That's the way I look at it. And I think the ultimate purpose of Bitcoin is just basically a pool of money. We're all pooling our money in one point, and at one point we all can take out. But the problem is once you take it out, there becomes a decrease in value.
Just like the stock market.
No, but stock market is based on growth of companies.
Okay. Right.
So it's not based on a pool of money. So I believe it's just a pool of money.
It's more simplistic in that way.
Yes. And that's why I always tell people you can actually determine whether Bitcoin will go up or down because it's about how many people are pooling in their money together. So the more people pool money into the Bitcoin, the more valuable it is. And that's when you should sell. The less people pull money into Bitcoin, the less valuable it is, and then that's where you should buy. Like, it's a very simplistic, I believe, concept. But again, disclaimer, there's no way here I am giving any type of financial advice. I'm just telling you the prediction of what I see Bitcoin to be.
Sure, and kind of just these basics of how it works and, you know, and looking at that. And I think it's interesting to look at how investing in these cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin does differ from other types of more traditional investing. I mentioned the stock market, say real estate. So what is advantages and disadvantages of saying, all right, this is all my wealth. How do I want to split it up in terms of what I'm investing in terms of saying, all right, well, maybe I should be including cryptocurrency as part of investments. What are some reasons to do that? What are some reasons not to do that in your mind?
Well, so if you take BlackRock and ARK Investments, obviously the EFTs, right? For
sure,
the futures for investment futures for you know, for Bitcoin, they established that, they pushed it, and they were not proponents of Bitcoin; they were against Bitcoin. All of a sudden, now they became friends of Bitcoin, especially the CEO of BlackRock, right? All of a sudden, now he's. For years, he's been bashing Bitcoin. I remember this from 2017. And they were killing the markets with this bashing of Bitcoin. Oh, like there was never going to be any type of, what do you call it, any type of adoption of Bitcoin. Now, in my opinion, and this is again my opinion, Bitcoin has its pluses and it has its minuses. The intangibility factor is a minus, right? Yeah. Tangibility is usually the world of business. Can I tangibly own something? But at the same time today, do we have tangible dollars and cents? No. Our dollars and cents are really in a bank with its virtual number, very similar to Bitcoin, very similar to cryptocurrency. And yet we are trusting the banks to say that is the money we have and that it will always be there. So we are still in that position that, hey, what's going on? Is the money available to us at any time, right? We assume it is. We assume it's our right to have it available. But yet, you know, who knows, right? I don't know.
I mean, if we all, and there was a time, and I forget exactly when it was in the last couple of years, where there was a major problem with certain banks of everybody went to get money at the same time. And not everybody can access their money at the same time.
Right.
To say, hey, I want to drain my account.
Right. So in foreign countries, you have that. In foreign countries, you do have that issue more than the U.S., right? Because the U.S. builds the system where you're able to interconnect with each other, right? Which basically means Zelle. Zelle, I think, helps a lot. Without a company like Zelle and these virtual – actually, Chase started it with QuickPay. Right. Without those types of instant transfers, I think it would have been, there will be huge problems with the banking system, because what would happen is that people who want to cash out, whenever they cash out, until today, you still can't cash out. Like for you to go to the bank and say, I want to withdraw $1 million. I think there was a podcast or an influencer who tried to do that and it didn't work. Like he had to go to several banks to do it.
Because they don't have all that money just physically sitting there. If you go and walk into a brick and mortar bank. Yeah.
I mean, cash wise, none of the banks have the equivalent of what's shows in data to cash. It doesn't match at all. So then why not just adopt Bitcoin? But either way, just for you to know there's record that you can Google this for no doubt that Swift has, the Swift system has adopted blockchain tech. I think they use Solana as the blockchain, either Solana or Chainlink. I think it's more likely Chainlink. They're using Chainlink's blockchain in order to mirror Chainlink with the actual Swift system.
Hmm.
So there is some adoption of blockchaining. There is something involved there, but I think that's only Chase doing that, or maybe just Swift. But I think that's also international. Go figure. You know, we really, really don't know. You know, we don't know.
Yeah, no, it's interesting just to see like how some areas in the financial market are like super techie and keeping up with things, and other things are like so kind of old and just how it used to work and just keeping with the technology that they've had. But I think that makes sense, just everything you're talking about with that. I mean, what we kind of just dove right into it, which I love, but taking a step back, what initially drew you to the world of cryptocurrency and kind of learning all of this, but also, as you're kind of talking about, putting some of your money into cryptocurrency?
So initially I wanted to buy Bitcoin when it came out 2009, but for me it was like, oh, you had to be a heavy high tech level, you know, individual, and I couldn't do it. I really wanted to do it. I wanted to take like 10,000 or 20,000. It was for peanuts. I should have taken it. It was a mistake that I didn't. I was in the
hindsight's 2020, right?
yeah. It was in the I was in the printing industry, and I didn't want to take it. I was in a hard, tangible industry, right? Book industry and printing industry.
Very opposite from printing.
Very opposite, yes. And then what ended up happening, we decided let's create our own cryptocurrency, our own altcoin. So we created our own token in 2017. You can look it up in iShook.io, right? And in that itself, you know, we were able to ultimately, you know, start getting into the crypto world. Initially, it was my partner's idea, the CFO of iShook. He decided to do that, and we end up doing it. We end up going for that, and you know, we end up getting into cryptocurrency, and we have our token now. Right now, it's available on LaToken, and you know, only accredited investors are invited for now. Ooh. And we ask everybody to really take in consideration. And then, you know, we take it from there. You know, that's how we look at it.
Yeah. No, that's very exciting. I think it's cool just to see what are the cryptocurrencies out there and what people can be researching and doing. So we've talked about Bitcoin. You know, you've mentioned this iShook one. Are there other ones that are on your radar, or are they so small that it's kind of hard to keep track of everything?
No, they are. There are many ones out there. I'm not going to tell right now which ones, because I want to promote our token, right?
Sure.
So we have SHK, iShook.io. You can look it up. You can look us on CoinGecko, and we're growing. We're growing. We've been around there. COVID really stopped our flow. But what I definitely tell everybody, the number ones, that the big three that you should always look at, it's basically going to be, it's actually really big four. It's going to be Bitcoin, Ethereum, XRP, which is another one, and then XRP, which is Ripple, and then you have Dogecoin. These are the ones you always have to be looking for, because these are the ones that are always, I believe, and also most likely Polygon. There's many more, Polygon and Polkadot. These are the ones I believe will always be around because of the technology around their product. So in that itself. We have to understand it's not just about the token. There's the technology behind it. And what does the technology do? What does the blockchain do? What does it do for services? What does it do for, like, there's many things that it can do. And we need to know what it does. You understand? And that's, I think, the major play. Like, where technology with the blockchain works. Now, Bitcoin became a cryptocurrency. It became a digital asset. And it became a utility. So that itself is undisputed. Everyone else is the question. Ethereum, so Ethereum for sure, I also believe is a utility. But whether it's a cryptocurrency, like a financial tool, I don't think Ethereum is a financial tool.
Hmm.
I think you can invest in Ethereum. You can put money in the pool. but it's not necessarily a financial tool. Ethereum is used mainly, the reason why you need Ethereum is to create these smart contracts, where I create alternate types of blockchain under the Ethereum blockchain in order to do certain actions, right? So that's the major concept. And again, don't forget what has been done with Ethereum is that there's been many networks of Ethereum created. Binance has its own network. They basically adopted the network and then they expanded it to their own, their own closed network, but Ethereum, so to speak.
So more of a tool, Ethereum, rather than a currency, it kind of sounds like.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Interesting. Yes.
Wow. That's how I look at Ethereum. I don't think Ethereum ever is going to be a Bitcoin. I think Ethereum's max ever, I believe its potential max could only reach to 20K ever.
Mm.
I think that's the max, my opinion.
Yep.
Again, my opinion. Don't buy because it's going to be reached 20X, right? 20,000. I think what will it be? It'll be at a 5,000 mark. Right now it's about 3,000. It'll reach a 5,000 mark, right? And I think it will stay there in a sense that because Ethereum is constantly mined and burnt and bought. It's like for you to do transactions, you need the gas money, which is Ethereum.
Mm. So really volatile then in terms of just how it can change. And I know that's been something since even, you
well,
know,
I don't know if it's, volatile because it's been stable at 3 almost.
Okay.
For a couple of months. I mean, yeah. I don't see not much volatility there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, so then we've talked about kind of with Bitcoin of, you know, I like how you phrased it with the simplicity of when a lot of people, you know, have Bitcoin and that pile is really big, you know, it's worth more. When the pile is smaller, it's worth less. Are there other factors that you think about that contribute to the rise and fall of what these cryptocurrencies are worth?
Oh yeah, definitely. So a lot for so let's go from the low to the top, right? We'll talk about these altcoins created by all these companies. Thousands and thousands of ICOs, initial coin offerings, were done in 2016 and 17. All of them disappeared. Almost 90% disappeared from the face of the planet.
Wow, that's scary for people that invested their money.
Because of COVID, of course. But they're stupid. Yeah. Whoever invested is stupid. I'll tell you why they're stupid. Because most of these ICOs, people created ICOs of a product that doesn't exist. Like, give me money now and I'll do the product later. Listen, do you know how many people I had dealt with like this? Give me money now and I'll do it later. You have to be like a savant project manager, right? That you do projects for a living, that you can say, give me money now and you'll get the result. How many have ever been able to do that? Very few. And we're relying on people to be able to receive money now and do it later. The U.S. is probably the only countries you do work now, get paid later.
Mm.
In all other countries, they get paid first and then they do the work. And honestly, I've done that and we do that with many companies overseas. They don't do the work. So it's a huge problem. Our company, iShook, we had already invested close to a million plus that time in 2017 into real life products and then ventured into cryptocurrency and doing the public, you know, raise, which we never did much of the public raise. We failed in the public raise because once we got into the public raise, boom, the crash started. And what was the crash? 2018 Bitcoin crash. And we just missed the boat of making millions of dollars that we could have really propelled the company much faster. But in hindsight, I'm glad it didn't happen because we're in a better position now with AI. And I feel like this is our start. And all the years that we've done all the work till now was to prepare till now.
Yeah. I mean, AI has changed the game in so many different ways. Is there an intersection between AI and cryptocurrency?
Well, I have a few ideas and hopefully iShook will be developing it. We're just giving you a glimpse of an announcement that there will be some sort of AI intervention with crypto and blockchain that we want to do.
Exciting.
But I'm not announcing what it is yet.
I like the teaser. No, that's great. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, there's got to be got to be ways that that works. Obviously, I'm pretty new to crypto and learning all of this, but we can chat offline about that.
Yeah,
listeners only get the teaser.
Yeah, yeah. No, the company, the staff get to know everything.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
We make announcements, and obviously, we have to, you know.
Yes, it's part of my payment, right? I get the insider secret.
Yeah, definitely do. You and Chad.
Me and Chad, right?
And the rest of the team, Daniel and everyone else.
And I mean, kind of just talking about this, what are some misconceptions that you've encountered about cryptocurrencies, and how would you debunk those misconceptions?
Okay, so I would want to tell all the traders something very, very important. And I think the traders really need to understand this very strongly. And what I would tell the traders is, you need to look at a company that has actually a product. Don't invest in a cryptocurrency. Why would you trade a cryptocurrency of a company that has no products? Like, we are viable from 2013. We showed history of viability. So that's already 11 years in production and making. And we've created a full ecosystem, right? I'm already stopping to try to micro our company. Like, oh, we have this product, that product. Forget it. We have an iShook ecosystem. That's what we're promoting. And our iShook ecosystem presents a full stack of abilities that people can do in one platform. And that's really what we're going to grow for. That's our growth spectrum here, right? That's where we're trying to get into. So the best news I could tell the traders, listen, look at our iPlatform, look at iShook, you know, iShook.io, check it out. Look at our token, look at it, read our white paper, and you'll understand what a real company really does. And I believe we are a real company. Of course, every company has ups and downs. That's life. Life is up and down. Financing is up and down, down and up. That's part of the game. Now, you cannot always be on top of the game. That's the reality.
But then sometimes, you know, if you're comparing it to stock market, other things, real estate, like when things are low, it's like, oh, get in now. And so there's a lot of positives sometimes. Yeah, during those down periods for people that are looking to
invest. Yeah, but how many people save actually money in real estate that they're when it's low, they can actually buy?
Right.
Most the biggest fail in the real estate companies, and I see these, a lot of these entrepreneurs are talking in real estate. They're talking, when you have your value of your hotel and value of your building, you take money against it and now you have this money. What do you mean? You just took a loan, right? If the market crashes, or if you have deficit in occupancy rates in hotels or in your rentals, you get the hit.
Yeah.
And if you own hundreds of millions of dollars, your hit is massive.
That's a huge gamble when you're setting it up that way, kind of right. A domino effect.
So of course, so now if you're telling me you cash out the money and it's in a bank on reserve, and you have a cushion for a fail, and then you have this extra money, and that ultimately relies on, are you buying your yacht or not? I mean, if you're a millionaire, don't buy the yacht. The yacht is too expensive. Like listen, I tell people, don't buy something that is difficult to sell.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to buy a hundreds of millions of dollar yacht. Who in the world is going to buy your yacht? You need another billionaire to buy your yacht. What does that mean? That means it's another 400 people who can buy your yacht. How many of the 400 already have their own yacht that they're going to buy your yacht?
Yeah, so, like what is that supply and demand looking
what
like?
What is the supply and demand? Yeah. Like? So a little advice to billionaires, if you build a yacht, make the yacht into a cruise liner as well. Like get it, Airbnb your yacht. Yes. That's what I tell you guys. You want to make money, don't leave your yacht burning money. If you're not using the yacht during the year, right, the off season that you're not using it, make it into a, you know,
passive
rent
income.
My yacht, passive income.
Yeah.
A few billionaires from a small guy teaching the billionaires how to make money.
Yes. No, I love it. I think ways to kind of look at, you know, passive income and ways to have an asset of yours be having multiple functions in that way, I think
is
really smart. Right. You know, so we've talked about a lot. We've talked about kind of the cryptocurrencies, the ones out there. You've given great insight and just kind of how you've gotten into it and a little bit of like the background of how it works. Anything else that you kind of wanted to hit on before we, you know, switch to business budgeting?
Well, I don't know much. What else can we really talk about cryptocurrency? I mean, the reality, there's so much. I mean, what else can we say in a small jest right now?
Yeah.
In reality, cryptocurrency, I think, is the future. right? The mock of its technology is the future. Now, would all these altcoins or all these other types of crypto blockchain, will they become a financial asset? I don't know. I mean, it all depends on what the government does and the SEC and all the regulatory bodies do and what the Congress will do in America. It already has been adopted by the big China, Russia, Brazil, BRICS, I think it's called, right? So the BRICS concept has already been adopted. So all that in itself, you know, it's there, right? It's part of the game. So the people are adopting the cryptocurrency as specifically Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin, we're talking about Bitcoin. That's the only one that they're really adopting. Are they adopting the other ones for their finance? As our government's adopting other ones? I don't think so. I don't think any government will adopt anything but Bitcoin and Ethereum. Ethereum is an asset that can adopt. And once Ethereum becomes adoptive, then it really amongst the Ether blockchain, all these sub tokens, it depends on what kind of company you are. What are you doing? Like what are you doing? What is it for? In our point of view, we don't look at our cryptocurrency as the main part of our company. It's an asset of the company. Mm-hmm. So it's not the main, right? It's an asset. There's points for it. If you read our white paper, it's really its main use was advanced payment for royalties, where you get here's your royalties, and then you can redeem your royalties in order to create less money transfer transactions that pay out Visa and American Express or PayPal or these other companies that take receivables for you, that you do it less at a time. Basically, we don't want you constantly withdrawing, but we want you to have the ability to withdraw at any time. So for example, Amazon, when they pay out royalties or other companies, Shopify, Shopify, you pay out royalties, but the payout is through Visa, MasterCard. But when all these other companies pay out, Apple, in-app purchases and all these other companies, when they pay out once a month. They give you a 1 month deposit. Who can live on a 1 month deposit?
Yeah.
Think about it. It's difficult. So what ends up happening is those kind of companies who are giving, or even YouTube once a month, right? When you reach a certain, you can define your threshold when you get paid. But nevertheless, once a month. But at least this way, we give you a token and you can initiate when you want it, what time you want it. That was the whole idea. And then this way, you can keep your royalties because then those royalties can be applied for further advertisement in the platform. So there's many usages that we have in our iShook token and our other blockchain techs that we're developing and that we have developed. So
that's exciting.
Yeah.
Just to see all the different ways that you can use it and the advantages behind it. And, you know, it does seem like how can, you know, Bitcoin and these other types of cryptocurrencies not be much more prevalent in the future. So I think that it's definitely one to keep learning about and everything. So yeah, thank you for letting me pick your brain about it and stuff.
I definitely have to keep
learning about it. Yeah. But kind of switching topics a little bit so we could talk more still about money, but talking about budgeting your business. I think this is so important for entrepreneurs, especially that are those entrepreneurs that are kind of newer to the space or maybe starting a new company. Why is it important to have a budget, first of all, to manage finances and to achieve business goals? You've had multiple businesses. I've had one. So you have, you know, a smidge more, I should give you more credit than that, but a lot more experience with budgeting, and you got a lot more people on payroll and everything. So why is it important to have a budget?
Well, how do you define a budget? Budgets can be tricky. You can lose money, you can gain money. So when you lose money, what's the point of the budget? Your budget is destroyed.
Yeah.
Right. Once you lost money. Or if a person throws a wrench in your profit margin or whatever, and does not keep to their word, misrepresents a deal. There's so many things that can happen when it comes to a budget, or misrepresents their capabilities, that throws your budget off. And I tell this to people all the time. You want to work with iShook, you want to work with me, very simple. Make sure you do more than you are being hired for to do. Because if you do less, you cause me financial loss. But if you do more, you only made me financially successful and you will get rewarded. That's how I work. But the problem is, if you do, you know, if you're coming in to clock in, you're not for iShook. You're not for us if you're coming to clock in, because we're not here for clocking in, right? We're here to make something tremendous, right? Something huge, something big, something that everyone can use, something that everyone can gain off of. This is what we're here for. So that's the first thing you have to look at your budget. Who is coming into your circle that will help you in your budget? Okay, because if they're here and they're just threw a wrench in your gears, they just ruin your whole budget. Like, this is something that very is important for every entrepreneur. Make sure you have the right entrepreneur, the right players.
The right team members.
The right players. If you don't have people who will take consequence or take, you know, and understand what their actions do, that you, and also, this is so important. And I learned this very, very, you know, I'm too trustworthy sometimes, right? It's very problematic. Now I'm not doing that anymore. So what happens is, if people misrepresent themselves, it's a problem, because if you tell me X, I will build off what you told me, right? Your word needs to mean something, because I can't be sitting there waiting every minute for you to send me an email or send me a post telling me what it is, unless you write it down. And if you're not writing things down, then it's also a problem.
Yeah.
But if you wrote something down, let's take the fact you wrote something down. You presented to me what you wrote. And what you wrote doesn't happen, right? You have lost.
You really have to count on your team members and people as an entrepreneur, the people that you're hiring, to be like, all right, part of my budget, a large part for a lot of companies, is wages, salaries, however you're defining that. So if you're not getting like the ROI there, the return on your investment needs to happen. So that hiring process is really important because of those downstream effects that you're talking about.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really important. And looking at, okay, what are the business goals you have, hiring the people that are going to help you get there, and that you're not having to micromanage. I think that's something that with different team members that I've had through DNA Today, it's like team members that are self-starters that are just like, hey, I'm going to do this and ask you questions as needed, but not necessarily have to be approving every little thing. Like, that's when it really starts working well, I think, of people. You're like, all right, I can trust this person is just going to do these tasks and have these responsibilities, and I don't have to worry about it because they're handling it. And that's what I'm investing. So I think that makes sense. And this might be a little bit more applicable to you than me. I mean, I guess I have a little bit of this, but that there's different types of budgets. So I know for me, having like my main product for DNA Today is a podcast. So part of the biggest part of our budget is marketing, of looking at how can we spread the word about the show? How much are we investing in that to then get more listeners? And then I can charge more for sponsors. What are some of the other types of budgets that you've had with multiple businesses? Or if you just want to talk about iShook, in terms of, like, I know there's operating budgets, capital budgets, cash flow budgets, things that I don't know as much about because I have a smaller business.
Well, marketing budget. Okay. So you have to, when you do marketing, and I don't want to divulge as too much from what iShook does in order to save marketing, right?
Right, right.
So I've already
higher level answer. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm gonna give you a more macro answer. Try to find tasks. For example, let's take marketing for example. Okay. Try to find how to market yourself with a one-time payment. Which means what? Focus on an idea that markets multiple things, or is a venue to market multiple ideas that you have, and pay and make sure it's a one-time payment. Basically, make sure you're paying one vendor that lets you do that.
Can you think of an example for that?
So I can say right now, YouTube is the example.
Okay.
YouTube is a funnel. It's like for example, if let's say you would be right now Nike. Would Nike not sell to Marshalls, or would Nike not sell to the Nike store? There's a Nike store, but there's also a Marshalls.
Right.
And there's also other we're talking about old school type of today. It's much less, right? But we're talking about like they would not sell Nike.
Kohl's, right? Kohl's sells Nike.
Like Nike would be there. Nike, maybe not the high end Nike, but the Nike will be there. The brand will be there, and you'll be ridiculous if the brand is not there. The brand must be there, even though you have your own store, right? So even though you have a Kira Deneen is a brand. And plus she has a brand with DNA today, right? That brand will be ridiculous not to be on YouTube or any other platform.
Okay.
But make sure that when you're on one platform, you invest on that one platform for all your marketing, but then retroactively backlink all the other places you're in.
So to make sure that whatever you're investing your time and money in, because YouTube, you could say, well, you're investing your time, right? And producing that, uploading that. So there's also different types of investments. But saying, okay, if we're doing this, we want to make sure that that's being pushed out other places.
Right. So if I'm marketing on YouTube, if I'm using YouTube as my platform of communication, my venue of communication, I will communicate all my other products and venues at one venue, at one vendor. So basically simple, YouTube or Rumble or Vimeo, wherever it is that you like, or whatever platform that you like to use, that you feel that's where you're comfortable at, right? Then promote on that platform and just fixate on that platform and building your voice. Then from there, you reel everyone in and say, this is what we got. This is what we do. You know, and hopefully you're going to get new customers that way.
Then expand out. And then prioritize, really funnel, and then say, all right, this is going well. Step two is to spread out more.
Correct. But don't spend your money on advertising more than that, right? Like spend your money on one platform. Pick the platform. You know, pick that platform. Focus on that platform. That is also another type of budgeting. You got to be savvy in how you're spending your money. Right. Make sure. And then you have to see, can I get the product for, a guy gave me a quote for $5,000. Okay. But then you got a question. If a guy gave me a quote for developing something for $5,000 and someone gave it to me for $2,000, right? What's the quality?
That's huge. Just because someone can do it for less doesn't mean, you know, it depends on what they're doing. If it's something that just needs to be checked off, okay. But if it's something that, all right, this is really important. We need to make sure that whatever's being developed is really high quality. This is going out there.
Right.
Anybody can make a video, but only some people can make a really high quality video.
You were talking about videos. I was thinking about tech development. Yeah, but either or, it doesn't matter, right? But I tell people right now, and we can announce it now, anyone who wants to get us, you know, promote for us to promote their books, we're here to promote their books.
Yeah.
It's going to be alive on iShook.me. You'll be able to promote it. You'll be able to
That's a huge pre-order part of iShook.
And get and be on our podcast. It's not even a question. But in that and minimal amounts, and we'll promote and resell your books. We have ways to do reselling. It's not a, and we can actually track the data of the sales. So but you have to be on Amazon, obviously. Amazon and the big players. So it's for us to track.
I mean, if you're not on Amazon, what are you doing if you're an author?
So. No, well, yeah. I mean, Amazon is already, I think they conquered the market in books.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I got my Kindle right here.
Oh my God. Now we got to send Amazon a bill now.
I know. Right. I'm like, damn, just promoted Kindle and showed
the whole thing.
Oh boy. But so, I mean, when it comes down to budgets, then a lot of it is, all right, well, X percent is going to be devoted to this, devoted to that. Since we've been talking about marketing, is there a certain range that you recommend for startups to say X percent should be reserved for marketing as opposed to other expenses?
$1,000 a month minimum needs to be spent on marketing.
All right. I like minimum. That hard number.
Minimum. If you're not spending, but again, it depends what you're spending on $1,000 a month. I mean, hopefully we'll create some sort of, when we do our own iShook X 100 shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we'll create booklets and showing people what new products they can do, sequences and you know.
To spend that $1,000 on.
Right, exactly.
What is going to get you the biggest bang for your buck.
Exactly, exactly. So with all that being said, you know, I would suggest everybody to do a lot of research, but you need $1,000 minimum a month. Minimum. Minimum. Don't even, you know, nothing less.
I mean, nowadays, it's like not even that much, you know?
It's not much.
With inflation in the last couple of years in the United States, it's just, yeah.
Well, it depends on when you're spending $1,000 a month. But if you have tech products, I mean, it all depends also What's your genre? What's your category?
Yeah.
What's your industry? What are you doing? I mean, like, you know, and I also tell people, don't get into business where you have to do government deals. Like, don't get, I always tell people, like, the one guy, I know so many people say, oh, I'm getting into the oil business. I'm in the oil business. I'm like, who the hell are you to be in the oil business? I'm like, what government connection do you have that you're going to get? Do you, is your best friend some sort of a congressman? Is Chuck Schumer or is what's his name? Graham? Is he, are they your best friends?
Lindsey Graham? Yeah.
Lindsey Graham? Are they your best friends? Like these? Like,
maybe.
Like,
yeah, that's
who are you? I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, like, what relevance do you have to oil business?
And then
I have people say, I'm gonna mine a mine, a diamond mine in Japan. I'm like, what in the world do you have to do in Japan?
So out there. Like, it seems like those kind of businesses seems like a front. I don't know. It seems
dead,
a little ridiculous.
You're DOD, you're dead. DOA, right? Dead on arrival.
DOA, yes.
DOA. You're DOA. Oh, you're dead on arrival. Don't even look into those businesses. That's just the most ridiculous thing you can ever think of. Now, if you're telling me you're doing some sort of practical, if you're doing some sort of craft, different jewelry, you're doing a different design, you're creating a brand. All right, listen, now I feel you. Now, okay, we can make this thing make 50 grand, 100 grand a year, 200 grand a year, quarter million. Like, let's break your quarter million a year. You know what I mean? This project. That already I can see happening. Like, but oil, like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm making a new battery for Tesla. Tesla competitor. Like, you're going to compete with Tesla?
Yeah.
Elon Musk is your competitor? Are you serious? You have to be a multi-million dollar company with Chinese back money, which they have one, a battery company that's backed by the Chinese. Then okay, or you have to have another one in Texas. I think there's another company that's competing. Like, there's got to be, like, what do you have? Like, these are things that are, and again, this also goes back to cryptocurrency. Why did you get into cryptocurrency? To shyst people, to screw people over? Or do you really have a real use for the cryptocurrency? Is there a layer that goes into your platform? Does it help people? Does it give a use case? Like, so these are the things, like, when before you budget it, make sure you're budgeting something that makes sense. Like, that's the first step everyone should do. Like, okay, I'm doing $1,000 a month. But if you're going to throw $1,000 a month of marketing or $3,000 a month of marketing on a dead industry because you have no connection there, you have no experience there, why in the world are you doing it? You're just burning people's money. Think about that. But the thing is, people like to burn people's money. It's easier.
They do.
Yeah. And, I don't like it. I hate it.
That it's important for those that are kind of really early and they're figuring out what their business is going to be. That's so important to make sure. Are you going into a business? Are you starting a business where this industry really has a future? So I think that's a big part. And with a budget, I mean, we've talked about the marketing aspects. How should people be coming up with their budget to begin with? I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to this. I think a big part is looking at what are your revenue sources currently or going to be.
Okay.
And estimating that income so that you can actually create a budget.
Okay. So This is the base rule everyone should know. And they use this in real estate construction, especially in New York City. Whatever the per square foot is, average, let's say $400, $500 a square foot.
Yep.
Add 30% more. That's it.
That's pretty simple.
if you can get it below budget, which is go for it. Try to get it below budget without affecting quality. That's fine. That means if you can get a certain item number in quality wise from another company, right, at a cheap rate because you have some sort of connection, you're bypassing some wholesalers, some brokers, go for it. Again, in construction, right? You never want to compromise quality. We have bridges collapsing because of that. Right?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Recently in Connecticut on 95, there was a big, big problem. And that is because a truck holding a bunch of gas exploded. But
okay.
Yes.
But again, that's already a different thing that how can you even do, like, for a truck exploding, how do we even, like, most engineers are not going to take that in consideration.
Right.
But they should. I mean, maybe now they're going
to
do it.
You do need to take into consideration when catastrophes happen. I know we mentioned earlier in the episode of having that reserve, like that safety fund of that being really important. Is there a certain amount that you recommend businesses to have as kind of their safety net?
30%.
Just
30%. Add 30%. And then if you don't use that 30%, give it back to your investor.
Mm.
And show to the investor, look.
Hey, we're doing well.
Yeah, we're doing well. We did it under budget. They don't need to know you added 30%.
Yeah.
Right? But the investor doesn't need to know that. The investor doesn't care that you're adding 30%. You need to add the 30% for your sake.
Mm-hmm.
So you add that. Make sure it's in the budget. Make sure it's in your investment portfolio. Right? That's what you need for your investment. And then try to get it below the 30%. Try not to using that 30%.
And but if you do, you say 20%, hey, look, you still had that 10%.
Right.
So that creates a really nice cushion.
Yeah. And then you can always give it back and say, listen, we did the best. We've achieved more than we expected. Here's your money back. But you gotta be that way, because it's better to give money back to an investor than to actually have the money, spend the money, and say, no, now we need 30% more in order to fix the problems we created.
Yeah.
Or for unseen issues.
Right. Because they're going to happen in all businesses. Things
right.
Come
even
up.
If you want to write, even if you want to write, we're collecting 30% extra for unforeseen, potentially unforeseen issues. But mm-hmm. then you're going to have to justify the 30%. You know, but so
right.
I suggest everybody, you don't have to really write it down. I don't think it's an obligation to write it down. Just
yeah, you're coming up with how much that invoice is going to be. So,
right.
You know. I mean, you have to have some numbers behind it of explaining kind of how you're coming up with it. But in terms of expenses, I'm learning that there is fixed costs, variable costs. How much do you know about this? I mean, with fixed costs, I think of, you know, for me, like every month we pay for certain digital tools, you know, so we have an email newsletter. We have, you know, what is it called? Like Photoshop apps. We have different things like audio editing apps. Like that's, you know, kind of a lot of our expenses.
Right. So I suggest, and this is what we do in our communities internally. Each, like, let's say you do newsletters. How many sponsors do you have in a newsletter?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have your sponsor just for the newsletter committed for the year. Cut that expense out. Cut that budget out. Right. Audio. Who's the sponsor for the audios? Who's the main one? Cut that out. Tell them, listen, this is the package. We want you just to cut our expense.
Have
this
them expense. Cover those expenses.
Have them cover the direct expense. And then every sponsor thereafter is a bonus.
Yes.
That's how you got to look at it. That's how you got to look at it.
Yeah. That's basically how we've set it up.
Yeah. And that's how you should set it up. And that's how you should set up in any other project that you're doing. That's so important. And I tell people that, you know, I don't tell people, but this is the advice if everyone would ask me. And that's what I tell them. Like, there's a lot you can do, and there's a lot of things. And I, for some reason, people don't know this. It's just, they just don't know it. So, you know, like, you have to figure out how to know this, right? So it doesn't come overnight.
And it's a lot of trial and error, I think, especially even going back to the marketing. It's like, you know, you might say, all right, well, this month, let's try this and see how it works. And it's like, all right, that didn't perform as well as I thought. Let me do something else for the next month. And so I think that's kind of true with other things. Like, you might be looking at, you know, say a digital tool or hiring someone, and you're like, you know, I think this is going to be good, but I'm not sure.
Right.
And so, you know, I think looking back at your budget every so often is really important, and recalibrating it to be like, hey, this is working really well. So I actually want to allocate more of the budget to go towards this aspect because the ROI is awesome on it. And kind of just looking at those like key performance indicators so that you can keep going back. How often do you recommend for people to re-strategize their budget?
How often? Depends how you want to grow. What's your growth level?
Yeah. Of looking at, depending on how fast things change too, I guess.
Yeah. It's also about adaptation. There's many, many factors involved.
Yeah. Is there other ways that you think about how to track performance and how well things are doing so that you can use that information to edit budgets?
No, not that I use. I mean, the more we're going to grow, for sure we need to create some sort of tracking. But again, you also have to be savvy in your budgeting, right? You have to know how to, like, you have to also balance, because if you're struggling, even if you're making the money, right? So you have two problems. When you're making the money, you have a problem. When you're struggling, you have the problem. What's the problem? When you're making the money, you can be overpaying because you think you're making the money.
Yeah.
When you can, when you don't, you know, because you think you have the money, I have it. No, but you can be overpaying. And then when you're struggling, you have to know what to pay first, what to pay second, right? So you got to figure out a way how to maneuver it. And it's too complicated, because every business, everyone has their own shtick, right? So it's very hard. It's very hard. I don't know.
It's very different, because we're kind of talking about businesses in general with that and figuring it out. Are there certain tools, software that you use to kind of look at just managing businesses and making sure that things are on track, or even just keeping track of invoices and different things? Because the bigger your business gets, the harder it is to just track everything.
Yes. Yeah. So you need a lot of automated platforms to do that, you know, so it's not so simple. I mean, but hopefully, listen, my goal is eventually to, depending on the structure where we're at, we might develop our own, you know, tech in order to, you know, monetize that kind of service. But we'll see. Yeah. There's not much I can really explain how to do the budgeting, because I haven't really found the best one yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's hard, because everything's different, as we said. Like, what works for one company in terms of breakdown of budget of, you know, 20% to marketing, you know, 40% to salaries, like, that's not going to apply to every business, especially for a lot of people that are listening to this. I, you know, imagine, and what we've heard so far is a lot of people are like solo entrepreneurs, where it's just them. There's nobody else on the team, or maybe they have certain people that they contract out to. Hey, can I hire you to design a logo? Can I hire you to develop a website, or like one-time projects? So I think that's where it's going to differ a lot. There's no magic number. And I think that's what makes it really hard. I think in terms of tools, I'm a little bit old school, I guess. I still use like Google Sheets to just keep track. And I have an income tab, you know, our expenses tab, looking at a tab of just what we've made over the years to kind of see how much we've grown over the years.
I don't think that's old school, you know? By the way. I think that everyone should be doing that. I think everybody should be
good.
Doing
that. I thought you were going to say, if you're not using that, QuickBooks, you're not on. No.
If you don't know how to do that, if you don't know how to use a Google Excel sheet, put your tabs, put your columns and all that stuff, then how are you going to use QuickBooks? How are you going to understand QuickBooks? I mean, the biggest problem that entrepreneurs have is not everybody is number savvy.
Right.
Right. That's number one. Number two is not everyone... Like, I don't like these. Sometimes I don't like the budget numbers, because then where's the risk in business? Where's the risk and reward in the business? Well, everything is in a number block. Then how do I ever take a risk? Because I can never take a risk. Oh, the numbers don't let me do it. Numbers will never let you make a risk.
Right. Especially when an opportunity comes up. You don't want to say, well, we're out of the budget for this quarter.
No, you take the opportunity and you try to figure out how to get the money after. That's the reality.
And I think that's why when you have a budget, it needs to be flexible, of kind of more like a guide, because things are going to happen where we've had opportunities where it's like, hey, we have this marketing opportunity. It's going to cost X amount and it's more than I paid up for other things. But I'm like, you know what? I just have this gut feeling. I think this is going to be good. I'm going to spend this money. It's more than we have all year or something, right?
Exactly.
And also looking at, I think just in general, you know, you look at your income, you might be like, wow, we're doing awesome. But you also have to look at what your expenses are, because the way that it's worked with my business is the more our income has gone up, the more our expenses has gone up. Now, overall, end of the year, our AGI, or adjusted gross income, is higher every year, as I would hope most businesses are, you know, in terms of a general trend over the years. But I think it's important to be looking at, you know, just because you're making a lot more, you got to keep in mind the expenses, but also in order to make more money, you got to spend more money. So I think there's also that relationship of, if I want to grow, I can't just say, all right, I'm keeping my expenses the same and I'm going to watch that income go. There's a relationship between the two.
Correct. No doubt. I agree with you with what you said. But again, everyone should also be careful in how they're budgeting and how they're doing their projects. It's also a catch-22 sometimes. You know, yeah. But again, that's business. I mean, that's doing entrepreneur work. That's taking advantage of opportunities. You need to take those advantages and you need to just jump into it. I personally think, yes, budgeting is important, but understanding what opportunities that are in front of you are also important.
Yeah, no, I think it is. And just keeping an eye out for when those opportunities come up. And part of being an entrepreneur is taking risks, as you said. And if you're not willing to take certain risks, you're not going to grow your business. And sometimes, because it's a risk, sometimes you'll do something and it won't work. But as long as you don't invest everything, a lot
of times. That's usually 80% of the time.
Very true. Yes. Yeah. So I think it's kind of just learning from your failures. And I know on this show, we've both talked about a lot of failures we've had, but in a positive way of, all right, we've learned from those failures and what are we able to take from that moving forward of, all right, I learned that this type of opportunity doesn't work for us. Whereas, oh, well, even though this was a failure, this part of it was kind of good.
Right.
And I think being able to step back and kind of analyze that in every way with your business of saying, okay, well, what am I learning from this? What can I really pour into it and be adjusting things as you go? Because as an entrepreneur, it's like, yeah, you can say, all right, quarterly, I'm going to update my budget, but you might have something major happen. You're like, I'm going to look at my budget today because things happen. Right. So I think, but that's also what's exciting about being an entrepreneur.
No doubt. And I think you should balance the budget and opportunity risk, you know, like no risk, no gain. That's why I tell people, if you're not taking risks, what the hell are you doing budgeting for?
Yeah. And I think a big part too is for me, I've built this business for myself over 12 years, but you know, that means I started in high school. So, you know, wasn't really making money for years. But that wasn't my goal at the time. And, you know, had a full-time salary job for a while. And then I've cut back on that. So even just, you know, budgeting in terms of how I look at spending is so different, because when a lot of entrepreneurs are coming from a similar background where they had a salary job and now they don't. And I think that's a big thing just in terms of your own personal expenses of, okay, you don't have that guaranteed every week, bi-weekly, you're going to get paid. As an entrepreneur, you could make tens of thousands of dollars in a day and not make anything for months. Correct. So I think that's something that I've mentally just had to adjust to. And I think that's also why it's so important to have that safety reserve of, I have more for my personal money is separate from my business money, but I make sure that my high yield savings account has much more than it used to. I used to put like a really big chunk into the stock market because I knew every 2 weeks I was getting my salary paid. Now, I don't know, right? So I think
depends what you put money into, right?
Yeah. So, but it depends on your business model.
Right.
But,
and also don't forget, every person thinks, oh, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm going to be the next Jeff Bezos. You're not. Mm-mm. You have to think in your mind, you're not. It's an outlier. It's a unique person. You know, he did something. It's not going to happen. So what a person has to understand is, just like there's different types of doctors, different types of lawyers, there are different types of entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
There are different degrees, different statuses, different levels of an entrepreneur. Just because you're not making $1 million doesn't mean you're an entrepreneur. You can still be an entrepreneur making $25,000 a year on your entrepreneurship work. But it doesn't mean you should not be a worker working somewhere else, because you got to feed yourself. I mean, that's just reality. You know, you can't sit in the campuses protesting all day and not making money.
Right.
No offense to those protesters. To each their own.
Yes, to each their own. But yeah, I think with that, it's often a good idea to still have, if you have the opportunity, like I now work part-time where I used to be salary. So my job has changed there to just cut back on hours, but it's nice that I still have a cushion of every 2 weeks I'm making a portion of what I did. But it's great if you have that opportunity to transition into being a full-time entrepreneur.
Yeah, but I think you can only do that because you have reserves.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Not everyone can do that if they don't have reserves. I think we had a podcast about that last time, right? That how do we sustain? So I say either you have a wife or you have a
yes, we did talk about that.
That's the way it works. I mean, it depends. It depends on, you know,
gotta wife, know yourself.
Right. And, not and what wife your life specific, but a spouse. Are. Let's use the word spouse. Let's be more inclusive.
There you go, buddy. Yeah. No, but this was great. I mean, I love talking about money. I think it's something that is everybody gets fired up about. And I think there's always so much to learn in this. And I want to give a book recommendation. I recently read Rich AF by Vivian Tu, and it was just a fantastic read. And it's more about personal finance. And
we got to get her on though. We got to,
oh my God, I would fangirl so hard if we got Vivian Tu on. We definitely have to put that. Let's do it. Let's do it. I love it, Betty.
Let's go for it. Let's do it.
Yes. Yes. She does a lot of speaking gigs. So I think that maybe that could happen, but it's a great, you know, I listened to an audiobook format and then I got the ebook just to be able to look at some graphs and stuff that she put in there in different charts, but really easy way to kind of, it's a little bit more than basic level. A lot of other books that I've read in the personal or finance space has been very general and like save money and things. And I'm like, yeah, of course. But this one a little bit more in detail. And I really appreciated that. Benny, I think you probably know everything in the book, but you know, for people that are my age that are still learning a lot and where to invest your money and the order of operations of maxing out if you have a salary job of that 401k matching, you got to do that. That's free money, right? Certain things.
Yeah. I'll be honest with the subscribers and the watchers, right? The viewers. I'm actually not that good at saving money.
Maybe that's a whole episode right there.
That's a whole episode because I tell you why. I'm a firm believer is when you're, if you up to 50 years old, invest your money.
Yeah.
Don't save your money. Because if you're saving your money, you're stashing.
It's not going to grow.
It's not going to grow. You're just losing the value, right? Yeah. You're losing the value. So I always say, if you make the money, spend the money and sit in investing the money.
Yeah.
You will win, but you're going to win. You're going to win at the end more because by your 60, 65, you're going to have a good retirement with your investment.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you need to know how to invest.
Right.
That's the problem.
And maybe we should do an episode on investing specifically because
we need to get bigger investors on the show. I mean, that's for sure.
That is true.
Yeah. We need to get bigger investors who can give more macro template and how to invest. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'll kind of leave my last thought. My uncle, shout out Uncle Bob, that, you know, big thing that he's always talking about is compound interest. And I'm 28 right now. And I've been investing in, you know, S&P 500. And it's been so exciting to watch that money grow. On the other end, when I see it dip, I'm not concerned because I've got decades for that to come back. And we've seen that over X amount of time, the stock market has never lost money. I think if it's like 20 years or something like that, like, you know, and I can't remember all the numbers, but so important when you're young to invest because that $1 will be so much more when you retire. And I'm probably not retiring until my 80s, I hope, because I love doing what I do. Yeah.
I mean, even if you're not retiring, you're still considered retired because of the money you made already, right?
Sure. And living on just the interest you make every year. But I get so excited about this. We are over time. So I want to be respectful of your time, Benny. But hey, always. We're passionate. I think people can really sense this, right?
I love it. I love it. Yes. I love it. Guys,
so thank you, everybody.
Tune in again. Subscribe to our shows, Midnight Market and iShookCo.
Yes. All right.
Be well,
until next week.